This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Dropping a hint. Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. Dennis Lockhart is president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta. He gave a talk last night at Georgetown University about the U.S. economy. Okay, time to read between the lines. Actually, it's more obvious than that. Lockhart said, quote, "Let me emphasize that I'm taking the recent inflationary pressures very seriously." He said the Fed must, quote, "react decisively." Investors are taking that as a pretty clear hint the Fed's next move will be an interest rate hike. The Commerce Department releases numbers on factory orders this morning. This follows yesterday's manufacturing survey, which helped take the markets a little higher. But as Ashley Milne-Tite tells us, with so much volatility in the market these days, these reports aren't always what they appear.
The factory orders data is what David Weiss calls a hard number. He's chief economist at Standard & Poor's. Yesterday's manufacturing data, on the other hand.
This measures how purchasing managers are feeling and sort of what they're seeing. This is a survey. This is not a hard number. But I think it is a good measure of what they're seeing out there and how optimistic they're feeling about their industry.
Weiss says factory orders could boost the markets today, just as the manufacturing index did yesterday. But that, he says, will have more to do with the high price of certain commodities and a growing economy.
We know we're going to get a big increase in oil-related orders because just of the price increase. That's not necessarily good, so you have to sort of take the energy items out of the index.
He's not expecting the markets to take a big jump, even if numbers are higher than expected. He says there's just too much other bad news out there for that. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
The Energy Department will come out with its weekly inventory numbers today. The new figures will slide into the debate over whether supply is a reason for the run-up in prices. Oil is near $142 a barrel this morning. It wasn't a terrible start for Wall Street for the second half of the year. The Dow picked up 32 points yesterday, or a quarter of a percent, to 11,382. The Nasdaq added 12 points, about half a percent, to 2305. For the S&P 500, it was a gain of 5, one-third of 1%, to 1285. Asian shares were mixed today. Shares in Europe are higher. Here is the latest installment of Beer Wars. InBev, the giant Belgian brewer, has stepped up the rhetoric in its bid for giant U.S. brewer Anheuser-Busch. Stella's parent is telling Bud, watch out or it's going hostile. Stephen Beard has the latest.
InBev says it would prefer what it calls a friendly combination. But if the St. Louis-based brewer continues to reject the bid, then InBev will pursue every avenue to win control. That means a direct appeal to Anheuser-Busch's shareholders. Some of them are clearly receptive to InBev's $46.3 billion offer. Two shareholder groups have now filed lawsuits against the Anheuser-Busch board. One of them, filed last Friday, accuses the board of unfairly rejecting the bid. It claims the board is failing in its duty to look after the interests of its shareholders. InBev's offer of $65 a share is 35% higher than the share price before the bid. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Brandweek, the news organization dedicated to the information needs of strategic-minded marketing executives, with real-time coverage now searchable at brandweek.com. And by Gather.com, where friends keep up with the people, conversations, and moments that matter most. People are talking about the economy at Gather.com.
Afghanistan has an age-old reputation as an exporter of high-quality nuts and dried fruits. This is despite a series of wars stretching from the late 70s. For instance, almonds from the country still fetch as much as 30% more in India as almonds from other countries. But those years of war have destroyed many of Afghanistan's prized orchards. Many would-be new growers are now left without the knowledge to bring the orchards back. Gregory Warner reports from Kabul.
Talk to horticulturists about Afghanistan before the war, they get a faraway look in their eye. The country was once the world's top raisin exporter and a fertile ground for new varieties. The most popular table grape in the world, the Thompson Seedless, is a version of the native Sultana, once traded on the Silk Road.
And I don't know how many thousands of trees there are here. There's an awful lot, huh?
Horticulturist Greg Cullen takes me to a local roadside market in Kabul, where villagers gather to sell fruit trees. Cullen has been mapping today's Afghanistan to find the next Thompson Seedless, or some local pistachio or almond that can recapture global markets. The process starts with these tree growers.
So his name is Mamad Hashem. So he's got apples, pears, apricots.
That Hashem has a market at all is encouraging. But the years of war, which destroyed his family's farm and isolated his village, took its toll on knowledge. The next thing he does demonstrates this. He pulls out shears and snips most of the buds off his tree. That's the fruit grower equivalent of a real estate agent selling you a house by smashing the windows.
He says the branches from the bottom wouldn't give any fruit.
Is that
true? That's why they trim them. No, they're the ones that were fruit early.
So there's just a complete...
Just completely wrong. The trees are grown wrong.
Western aid organizations have spent some $50 million in the past 2 years just on horticulture projects. And Afghans are optimistic, planting some 3 to 4 million new trees each year, according to government surveys. But Cullen wonders how many of those new trees will live to flower, or if they'll be marketable.
The assumption was that people have a general knowledge and they just need some incentives to move ahead, plant some more, improve standards a bit, and things will be right. But we're pretty sure in our projects, most farmers don't have very basic knowledge about how to grow fruit trees.
If they can get this right, Afghan almonds or pomegranates would be more profitable than poppy. It takes 5 years for a tree to start producing fruit. For people living day to day, that's a long time to wait to see what business will bloom. In Kabul, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
For more from the Marketplace Morning Report, visit marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. Thanks for tuning in.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.